You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Russell Brown is a journalist and the owner of Public Address, whose tagline is a community of blogs. Over the weekend, I saw an article posted by Russell in the Hard News section that asked whether Iran had found an effective treatment for COVID-19. Conversations around vaccines have been around since the global pandemic was first defined as such by the World Health Organization. But those conversations have become more pronounced of late as we move into a phase of trying to return to some level of normalcy and as our knowledge of the virus grows. What we do know is that we know very little, but we can at least say with some confidence that social distancing measures of some sort will probably stick around until we have a vaccine. In fact, it is being reported that the Tokyo Olympics may not go ahead at all if a vaccine cannot be confirmed. A University of Otago infectious disease specialist, Professor David Murdoch, has said, though, that development of a COVID-19 vaccine is at best 12 to 18 months away. But more than 100 vaccines are now in research and development, with around 6 of these being used in clinical trials, and many people are commending the speed in which the process has kicked off. A process that can normally take a very long time. As Newsroom reports, it goes like this. Phase 1 tests a very small number of healthy people. The key questions are, is it safe? Is it producing antibodies? Phase 2 tests a bigger group. During this phase, the dosage is tweaked to see what the optimal dose should be. Again, antibodies are measured to get an idea of whether the vaccine is triggering the immune system. Phase 3 tests thousands of people representing a cross-section of a population. These people split into a control group that gets a placebo and a group that gets the vaccine are monitored for months to see if they catch the virus. Now, back to Iran. Russell reports that Australian Dr. James Freeman believes an effective treatment for COVID-19 may have been found in trials in Iran. A daily oral dose combining sofosbuvir, which was developed by Gilead, and dacloplasmid, which was developed by Bristol Myers Squibb. The two have been previously combined as a treatment for hepatitis C. Indeed, that's pretty much the only way dacloplasmid is used, says Russell. The combination was easy to use in a trial in Iran because it's manufactured there as a fixed-dose tablet called Sovadac. So, because I don't know much about this, I reached out to Russell to explain further, and I started by asking him to recap this article a little bit.
I've been covering hepatitis C, and which is referred to as New Zealand's silent epidemic, and particularly affects people in their 50s and 60s who contracted it some decades ago. And in particular, the rise of a new class of drugs, direct-acting antivirals, which raise the prospect of eliminating hepatitis C in New Zealand, which, as with COVID-19, does not mean zero cases. It means you've eliminated the epidemic. And one of the people I've talked to in the course of doing that work, Hazel Heal, forwarded me a newsletter from an Australian doctor called James Freeman, who has been a champion of these new drugs and founded a buyer's club so that people could actually obtain them when the pricing was prohibitive, which it really was. We were talking, for the first one that came out, Gilead Sciences, the company that had developed it, charged literally $1,000 a tablet.
What?
Yeah.
How many do people need?
It was a 12-week course, so it was $84,000 US.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah. But the interesting thing is that it appears that sofosbuvir, which was the first of these drugs to hit the market, interesting fact, a lot of the trialling was done in New Zealand under Ed Gein, and a lot of New Zealanders had their lives saved then. But anyway, sofosbuvir may be associated with a very successful trial in Iran. That is what Dr. Freeman had decided from. He has contacts with doctors in Iran, and he'd looked at what reports there were on trials of this drug, because Iran's had a particularly serious COVID outbreak. And in particular, it was a fixed-dose tablet, which is manufactured in Iran, rather than by Gilead, which can't charge $1,000 a tablet anymore, that was a fixed dose of sofosbuvir and dacloplasmid, which is another antiviral that works differently. And from the results he was able to turn up, which was largely reports in the Iranian press, it looked like this was an effective treatment. I think you've got to be cautious about saying cure. I mean, these drugs, in the case of Hep C, you can't actually say they cure it. They're remarkable. And the really key thing about them is that they're not toxic. The risk of adverse reactions is really, really low.
Right.
So if the doctors in Iran are onto something, and it appears that they have expanded this trial because the results are so good. Basically, everyone who got this drug combination got up and walked away.
Wow. So you're saying the drug combination is what has been used for Hep C, or it's a slight variation?
It's what has been used for Hep C in that part of the world. These drugs are used often in different combinations. They have different effects. So formulation is actually a really interesting thing with these drugs. You know, they're not just pressed into tablets. Sometimes there'll be another layer that means that the drug is absorbed at a particular part of the digestive tract, for example. But what he had determined from what he could see was that this particular combination, and it might just be that it's the main one, the sofosbuvir, that's doing it, but this combination, which was very cheap and easy to manufacture, had achieved some remarkable results in the trial in Iran. And really, the reason I wrote the story, I was trying to be very cautious about writing the story because you don't want to be that guy. And I initially typed out the word cure and I thought, no, let's say effective treatment.
Right.
But the point of writing it and the reason I wanted to write it relatively quickly was to point out that nowhere else in the world is this combination being trialled, and perhaps it makes sense to do so.
How did you confirm that, but without canvassing all of the different trials that are happening?
It turns out, I didn't find it actually when I wrote the original piece. There's a trial in Columbia University, a program at Columbia University, funded with Chinese money, which is exploring compounds based on sofosbuvir. But I did a search and I couldn't really find anywhere that this was being used as a treatment. And it is plausible that this would be a treatment. I think that's a really key thing. What these drugs do, they're called nucleotide analogs, and they put fake letters in the RNA of the virus, and it disables the virus. And,
wow.
If you ever meet someone who has been treated with any of these drugs, the one that Pharmac funds now is called Mavirit, but they all do basically the same thing. They disable the virus by rewriting its RNA. They're incredible drugs. And it's a 12-week trial. Most people have no ill effects, and it is a cure.
Okay, you said you wanted to get it out fairly quickly, and that's fairly natural when you have a scoop and you want to be the first person to say it. But I guess, did you have any thoughts around, like, you know, or querying, like, why this isn't being talked about?
Yeah, and James had suggested some things, and I talked to Hazel as well. I mean, Iran is a very isolated country, in geopolitical terms and commercial terms because of sanctions, and that may be part of it. It also may be that Gilead, who have another drug in the race, remdesivir, which is part of the same class, and was actually tried on Ebola, but didn't work. But that's a drug that they still have fairly good commercial control over. So in the brutal business of Big Pharma, perhaps there was an incentive for them to put that forward as the one to work on, rather than a drug combination that included a drug made by another company.
Right.
So there may have been commercial reasons in there. Yeah, you can't tell, but it does seem odd that no one has sought to replicate these apparently pretty good results.
A couple of things I want to touch on too, in terms of our own, I suppose, mediascape. So, I mean, there's been plenty of great articles written recently, especially around COVID-19 stuff. But what I found with this piece was that it was like, you are actually investigating something and going through a process of research, which, yes, a lot of, you know, journalism still is happening right now. But a lot of what we are focusing on is that day-to-day, the drip feeding of information about cases, about, you know, what's happening next, or what does level 4 mean. And this is very important, but why is it also important that we ensure these kinds of investigated pieces where we're learning something and questioning something? Why is it important these continue?
Because, well, I think it's important just to write about science well. And in a way, I was less investigating than trying to set this in context. The same newsletter that Dr. Freeman wrote had actually been republished on another guy called Michael West's website in the US, but he'd just copied and pasted it, and I thought, well, that actually, it needs a bit more than that. Let's explain why this might be plausible and have a look at what these drugs do, which is what I wanted to do. I mean, I'm very, again, very, very cautious of being that guy. You don't want to be the one who's popped, oh, there's a suppressed treatment in Iran. Whereas the case is that there's a very promising treatment that possibly for non-medical reasons isn't being as widely trialled as it could be. Mm. So that was the aim of the whole thing, to point out, hang on, you've got 50 hospitals in Australia doing a hydroxychloroquine trial, that's the malaria drug that Trump's been recommending, that already from other studies around the world looks like not a good candidate to be chasing up. It's a dangerous drug. So you've got all these resources going into a drug that actually doesn't look like it's going to be it. And I know that Dr. Freeman actually suggested to the people at the Ascot trial in Australia, which is this big one, 50 hospitals, that perhaps they could actually sub in some other treatment, including the ones that Iran seems to have found some success with, and they weren't able to. So we've got all this momentum with that drug going in a direction that possibly isn't that useful.
Do you want to leave us with any, you don't have to, any sort of reckonings on the kind of future of New Zealand's media?
I don't know about, yeah, I mean, it's been interesting kind of being in the midst of it, because my partner worked for 16 years at Bauer. All of a sudden she doesn't have a job anymore.
Right.
There are, I know, buyers sniffing around a couple of those titles and talking to the receivers. So it's a matter of what comes out of that, I think. I do think Bauer were clearly very ready to go when they pushed the button. They got everyone's final pay sorted very, very quickly, including redundancy pay. So I think this is something they'd been thinking about for a while.
Yeah.
And, it wasn't like they were trading merrily and then the lockdown happened. It is a challenging time for media. We've been in an existential crisis anyway, and it just got worse.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I guess my key question, and again, you don't have to respond to it, I'm sort of been thinking a lot about the way lots of criticism has been put to the kind of press gallery in these times of daily stand-ups. Do you have anything to say about that, or?
Yeah, well, the gallery defends itself by saying we have to ask these questions to get them on the news. So it's almost not so much a question of journalism as the technical requirements of TV. And I think anyone who starts making TV realises that there are these things that have to happen. Whether the bleach question had to be asked, I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
I really don't know whether that question had to be asked, but why it happens is basically to get the denial on the record.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
One thing, if it does turn out that one of these antivirals is an effective treatment against COVID-19 infection, then that's a really, really good thing, even if it just buys time, because these drugs are in production, they're well understood, and in many cases they're approved. Some of them are going to be harder than others to implement. The remdesivir, the Gilead's other one, is a potentially harmful intravenous treatment. The really, really good thing would be if it's one of the oral antivirals that have no ill effects and cure people in 12 weeks. That would be a really good scenario. We'll see. It's certainly going to happen a lot quicker than the vaccine.
Right, because it just fast tracks it because it's already there.
Yep, exactly. Okay.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.